This week on the Docs to Dads podcast. It's been 6 months since our move to Arizona, and there have been some lessons learned along the way, and I want to share those with you this week on the Docs to Dads podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Docs to Dads podcast, a health and wellness resource for any dad looking to actively engage with their health, the health of their children, and building a stronger, healthier community around their family. Each week, Dr. Scott, a board-certified pediatrician, will explore topics relevant to child health and how dads can be an active participant in their growth, development, and other issues that affect children and the whole family.
Welcome back to the Docs to Dads podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Grant, and I am very excited to have you with me here today. Surprisingly to me, it's been about 6 months since we relocated my family across the country from Michigan to Arizona. Last week, on my birthday, actually marked that 6 month anniversary of having relocated out here with our family. It's funny to reflect back on this journey that we've been on, both in terms of making the decision and making the move. Certainly go back and check out that episode if you want to hear more about that. But I kind of talked through in that episode that I did about 6 months ago, kind of what were some of the strategies and tactics that my wife and I used to try to help prepare our kids for this big move across the country. And I kind of wanted to go back and reflect on some of those choices that we made that seemed to work, and maybe that, you know, some of the strategies that we're continuing to use for smaller changes that we're making along the way, and also reflect a little bit on maybe some things that I wish we had done a little differently now that I know how things have played out. There was no way to know that ahead of time, but now that we know how everything has played out, maybe there's some things that I wish we had done differently. So I'm going to just reflect briefly in this episode on those couple of things and try to make it relevant to your journey as a dad, because you may not be thinking about moving your family across country, or maybe you are, and in which case this is more directly applicable. But I think a lot of these lessons can apply to just helping your kids through any kind of transition, whether they feel like big transitions for everybody or whether they're just kind of hard moments that your kids might be going through. I think that one of the strategies that we used that was most effective for helping our kids with the move was this idea of storytelling. We were frequently in the lead up to the move telling our kids stories about the fact that we were making this move together as a family, where we were going, what we were going to do when we get there. And I talked about this. This has kind of been a strategy that I've been trying to employ more and more since going all the way back to the road trip episode where I talked about taking road trips with your kids. When it came to the move, we started with storytelling to help kids, our kids, understand some of the big changes that were going to happen. And using this tactic of storytelling just helps them know what to expect a little bit better. And I think this is more or less important for different kids, but especially my oldest kind of likes to know what to expect. He gets a little frazzled when he isn't sure what's coming next. And so, you know, using this storytelling tactic to help him sort of know, like, this is going to be the plan going forward has been, you know, a big help for him. And it certainly helped, I think, with him making this big move, because it helped him know what to expect following the change. And the more you tell the story, the more they're likely to remember those changes when they come to pass. And so they know what to do. They know what to expect. They know that everything's going to be okay because everything's going to plan, right? And so before we made this move, we used the example of telling the story, for example, about the new school that our kids were going to go to. So helping them understand, what's the name of the school? How are they going to get there? Once we knew their teachers' names, we were talking through, like, what are their teachers' names going to be? Who's going to be taking them to school and picking them up, and just sort of telling these stories to the extent that we can to help them understand what life is going to look like as it pertains to going to a different school. And I'd say overall, the transition to the new school has been one of the more successful parts of this move. The kids really like their new school. They're attending it really well. We haven't really had any kind of major meltdowns, even though my daughter, this was her first year in school. Now she's sort of all the way through most of the school year, and things have gone pretty smoothly. You know, there's been a few little moments here and there that have been challenging, but overall, that part of it has gone particularly well. We also used storytelling and pictures from the website to help our kids sort of see and understand our new home. So, like, where is our home? We'd show it to them on a map. We'd show them how we'd get from there to their school and to other places that we might need to go. We'd show them, you know, this is going to be, you know, your room. This is going to be the baby's room. This is going to be mommy and daddy's room. This is where we're going to, you know, cook all our meals. And we talk about, you know, for us, it's like Saturday morning, we're going to get up and we're going to make pancakes or French toast or something, and sort of allowing them to sort of see the pictures of the space in the kitchen, and kind of talking through how some of those traditions that they've gotten used to in our old house, we're going to continue in our new house. And sort of most importantly, we're going to do all of these things together as a family. This storytelling tactic, I think, is really important for a few different reasons. One is that even for little transitions, like what the plan for the evening is, or how we're going to transition into bedtime, or, you know, what's our plan for a fun Saturday in terms of, like, we need to go run some errands, but then we're going to go to the park. Just like laying out kind of the story of the day and this adventure that we're going to go on together allows the kids, again, to visualize that plan, see their role in it, and just kind of helps move things a little bit smoother. So this is something, you know, a tactic that I've been using more and more and more in my role as a parent, especially as my older two have gotten old enough to start to understand some of that storytelling. And it looks a little different for each of them. So for my oldest now, I can give him more big picture stuff and he can kind of fill in the details. Or I can also give him some choices and say, like, what order are we going to do? You know, we got to get these three things done. What order do you want to get them done in? Or we can say we can go to one of these two parks, for example. Which one do you want to go to? And sort of let him be a part of telling the story. And he really likes to do that. And then sometimes I can just give him the big picture stuff and he can kind of figure out the other pieces that need to go on. Allowing him to sort of be part of telling the story allows him to assert some of his own independence that he's starting to try to assert now that he's getting a little bit older and wants to feel like he's kind of part of the action. And then you sort of add in more and more detail as kids get younger. Because, for example, to me, it seems obvious that the right thing to do after you go and get your PJs is to put those PJs on. But I, you know, this step always seems to get forgotten unless I explicitly state it. So you not only have to go get your PJs, but then you have to put your PJs on. That is two separate steps in my house, unfortunately. I would think that was all one thing, but not quite there. That was one of our battles last night. And then the other reason why I think storytelling is a really powerful tool, although it can backfire if we're not careful, is that the stories that we tell our kids about our family and about themselves will inform kind of how they think about themselves. Because you're not just telling them a series of events, but you're telling them about these, the characters in your story are you as a dad and about them as kids and sort of how they're going to react in certain moments, and sort of talking through those things ahead of time will inform how they think about themselves, right? And that'll become sort of their internal dialogue with themselves for a long time to come. And so I think it's really important that we think about that and step into it proactively. Otherwise, you might find it backfiring a little bit. You might find it being more of a negative and critical voice than you intend to be, because things will just slip out if you're not thinking about it, right? You know, just as an example, the other day, this is sort of not my proudest moment, but the other day we were getting ready to go outside. My son was sitting on the stairs with his baseball gear ready to go. He's got his bat, he's got his glove, his hat, you know, he's got his batting helmet that he got for his actual baseball season that we just finished. He's got everything ready to go and he's sitting on the stairs kind of right in the middle of the way, but doing his best and waiting on me to kind of get all my stuff together and get the other kids situated so that we can go to the park and play some baseball. And I'm coming down the stairs and he's kind of got his stuff everywhere. So I'm trying to work around him. And just as I'm about to step, he accidentally like moved the bat in such a way that it landed right underneath my foot. And I slipped and I fell. And sort of without thinking about it, I blurted out like, "You're trying to kill me with that bat." And he like, as he does, just because of his personality, like took this to heart. And he like really was hit by the fact that I seemed to think that he was trying to kill me for real, right? And it was just sort of an expression that came out of my mouth, but without really thinking about it. So we had to kind of have this moment of reconnect because he believed, even though he knew it wasn't true, he believed that he had done this on purpose and that he was actually trying to hurt me. And I knew that wasn't true, and he knew that wasn't true. But because it was something that I said, and because I'm his dad and he is inclined to believe the things that I say, you know, he started to like get really upset and like imagine himself as somebody that was trying to hurt me on purpose, right? And it was really important for him to let me know that wasn't what he was trying to do, and it was just an accident, right? And it kind of led to this big meltdown because I couldn't keep my cool. And the story that I ended up telling in that moment was, you know, not a helpful one, right? And so just being mindful too of the way that our words are going to impact, even when I, you know, we think that our kids aren't listening to us, or they don't know the difference, or they, you know, they don't always understand the sarcasm and some of those kinds of things as well. So being mindful of that as well, because storytelling can be a really powerful tool in your parenting toolbox that you can use to proactively, you know, encourage certain good behaviors or good traits within your kids. But it can also be that sort of negative critical voice. And so I want to really encourage you to think carefully about the stories that you're telling your kids about your family, about your community, and about themselves, because they're going to believe you. Whatever you tell them about themselves is what they're going to come to believe about themselves. And this can be a powerful tool when you use it correctly. One of my people that I look up to in sort of the pediatric space, Dr. Heather Forthke, talks all the time about, we have this sort of misconception that we just kind of figure ourselves out. We learn about ourselves just by sort of thinking deep thoughts about who we are and what our intentions are and those kinds of things. And especially as we're initially establishing that identity when we're very young, that's just not really true, because most kids aren't like pausing to reflect and think deeply about their motivations and their intentions and those kinds of things, right? Most kids are just running and playing, and the dialogue that they hear and the story that comes to pass about sort of who they are in the world and what their role is and what their jobs are in the family and in the community and their responsibilities to themselves, all of that comes from the adults in their lives who are doing the storytelling. And I think it's really important to know that those labels and the language that you use around your family and around your kids is what's going to leave an impression as those kids grow. Okay. We're all going to slip up here and there, like I did with the bat situation. So it's not something that you need to like measure every word that you ever say to your kids, right? And we're all going to slip up, and we're all going to have moments where we lose our cool and we say something we don't mean. And that's where the importance of repair comes in, right? We have to sit with them in that moment and sort of apologize and say, "No, that's not really what I meant, and I'm sorry that I said that," and then kind of come around to a better understanding from there. And so that storytelling, it was kind of this small piece of what we were doing as it relates to the move, but it's really something that I've been focusing a lot on over the last 6 months and has been a major tool for me in my parenting lately, and so I wanted to share that with you. The one thing that I wish we had done a little differently is spend more time sort of saying goodbye to the old house. I think in our enthusiasm to get the kids excited about the new house and the move and keeping things positive, I don't think we really sat enough and did quite enough with the negative emotions that our kids were likely to feel related to leaving our old house and our friends and some of those kinds of things before we left. And I don't think we did quite enough to help the kids sort of say goodbye. We just kind of left one day. And I think that was pretty difficult. I know they saw the the moving boxes and us packing and all of those kinds of things. But I don't think we maybe did enough storytelling about like finishing the legend of the Michigan house, if you will, as this place that was beautiful and wonderful to us. It was, you know, the first house that my wife and I bought together. It's where we, you know, brought all of our kids home from the hospital after they were born. So obviously that house means a lot to our whole family. And this has proven particularly difficult for my daughter, which has been a little bit of a surprise. I think we thought the oldest, just because he has the most memories, would be the one that would have the biggest issue with the transition and sort of missing his friends from school. He had actually been going to school in Michigan. I think we thought, and maybe because of that, we spent a little more time helping him process some of those things. And I think we sort of imagined that our daughter, you know, would not have quite so many memories and would not struggle with that quite as much as she has been. And she's definitely, of the kids, the most likely to sort of bring up the old house and how much she misses it. Part of that is because she loves looking at old pictures and videos. And so she's constantly watching those on her phone and sort of seeing places in the old house and things, you know, fun things that we did at the old house. And then she's, you know, brings up that she misses the old house and she wants to go back there and those kinds of things. And so she's more likely to do things to remind her of the house. And I think that's part of what's going on, but it can be hard to know exactly what the right thing to do is as you're making those transitions. But I can't help but wonder if we had come up with some other way for her to sort of keep the house with her, some kind of like art project or some other way to kind of keep that memory, if that would have helped her transition been a little smoother. She's doing fine. Like, she's doing really well, especially at school and those kinds of things. But, you know, she's definitely somebody who several times a week at bedtime or while we're out for a walk will sort of mention how much she misses the old house. And it's something that my wife and I have been reflecting on a little bit. Just think about whether there was some way we could have done that differently if we ever needed to make another, you know, big change or something like that in the future. You know, we're trying to help overcome some of this proactively and intentionally by planning a trip back to Michigan this summer. We're not going to be able to go back to the old house. I don't even know if we're going to end up in the Detroit area. We're going to be in a different part of the state where we used to visit pretty frequently, where my wife's family lives and where my father-in-law grew up. But that's a part that, you know, is probably my daughter's favorite thing about Michigan. So I think she's really excited to be able to go back there. We're going to try to arrange to see some friends who might come up north and see us while we're there. And so I think that is going to be helpful in terms of reestablishing those good memories and kind of reminding her of everything that's good about that and kind of showing her that we can still experience those good things from Michigan, even though we live quite a bit farther away. And so we're hopeful that they're excited about that. We've already told them that we're making that trip this summer. And so we're really excited to do that. And so I think my takeaway from that mostly is just where it's possible to try to come up with ways for them to stay connected to the best parts of whatever the old life, the transition is. You know, sometimes that's not practical or it's not in their best interest, right? If, you know, we had a good situation where we're moving away from a happy home with stable jobs and good friends to a new place with good jobs and a stable home. And we've been lucky to establish some good friendships here. So, right. So this has been relatively positive all along, right? I'm sensitive to the fact that there's a lot of families out there who have to make transitions because of job loss or, you know, abusive situations or any number of other things that might be happening out there. And so it may not be prudent to have acute reminders of those previous experiences lying around all the time, either for you or for the kids. But if there's some little piece of it that they want to hold on to that helps them with the transition and kind of helps them remember that, like, that's part of their story as well, right? And so the story is not just where we're going, but it's also where we've been, and sort of allowing them to hold on to some of the pieces of the story that have come before, I think, is something that I wish we might have been a little bit more proactive at doing. You know, at the end of the day, kids are looking for validation of their feelings and that sense of security before most other needs. We're going to talk a lot more about this next week. I'm going to break down that Becky Kennedy, Andrew Huberman interview, which is an incredible 3 hours of YouTube. If you have time to listen to it, I can't plug it highly enough. I'm loving every minute of it as I go through it again to kind of take notes and get all my thoughts together for that episode. But one of the things that she talks quite a lot about is the main thing that that kids need in those early days is validation of their feelings and a sense of security and safety, right? It's been very important for us to not dismiss the kids when they express sadness about missing Michigan, right? Especially our daughter. You know, we could certainly say like, oh yeah, sure, you miss Michigan, but look at all these other great things that we have now that we've moved. We can play outside every day and we've got a pool in the backyard and all these other things, right? And I think this is a trap that a lot of parents fall into where we want to focus on staying positive, but it actually kind of undermines the way our kids' feelings and makes them feel like they're bad or wrong for having these feelings, right? I have started to try to use language that's more along the lines of like, yeah, I miss our old house too. We had a lot of fun memories in that house and it'll always be special to us, especially because that's the home, you know, that we brought you home to after you were born. That's the house we took care of you. We had Christmas and Easter and birthday parties in the backyard. And there were a lot of really great things that we did at that house. And it's okay to miss our house and it's okay to miss our friends. But when we go through big changes, mommy and daddy are always going to be here to help you. And we'll do it together as a family, right? And that sort of serves that dual purpose of validating those feelings. Like, it's okay that they're feeling sadness, but it's also something that we're going to help them through. Like, they're going to have the security of, we're going to do this together as a family. That's the last piece that I want to mention here is just when the kids have those big transitions, they sometimes feel nervous that they're going to have to figure it out by themselves, right? And perhaps the most important thing we can do is just let them have those feelings and let them know that we are on that journey together as a family. Have there been meltdowns along the way? Oh boy, you know, like 18-month-old is totally in the like screaming for everything phase and we're working on that, you know. So yeah, there's been stuff along the way. It can be tough to know like when is this like difficulty with the transition where we should just give a little grace and move on, and when is it time to sort of draw a line and say like, this behavior is not going to be allowed, right? You're allowed to have the feeling, but this behavior is not going to be allowed. In some ways, you just have to trust your gut and you won't always get it right. But again, you just got to show up every day, do your best, repair when you need to, and helping kids navigate those challenges when and those big emotions when they get tough, because that's what you're there for. And then as just a closing thought, we'll dive more into this next week too, but I think it's a good way to close this episode too, which is Dr. Kennedy's definition of resilience that she gives in that episode of the Huberman Lab podcast is the ability to tolerate and navigate the broadest range of emotions successfully. And I think that's what we want for our kids, right? Sometimes as parents, there's this instinct to try to create a world without negative emotions, but it's not really practical. And so we don't really want to create this artificial world where our kids' negative emotions are immediately brushed away and filled with like fake positive ones, because they know that that's not real and you know that it's not real. And so it's not really very helpful. What we want to do is try to sit in those negative emotions with our kids and tell our kids the story that they're strong enough and brave enough to navigate through those successfully, so that when they come out the other side, they know that they can do that again in the future, either with our help or eventually by themselves. They can kind of develop the tools that they need to navigate through those negative emotions without needing somebody else to come and brush those away for them. Again, we'll talk a little bit more about that probably in several more episodes along the way, but just sort of a thought to share. Like, sometimes when we're going through these big transitions, especially when it's something that you as a parent have decided to do, right? Like, this is a move that we didn't have to make. This was a decision that my wife and I made proactively to try to put our family in a slightly better position in a few different ways. And so it can sometimes feel a little bit like when our kids are having negative emotions about it, like we've caused that, right? And our instinct is to go and try to like make it better, like help them just understand why we made this decision, right? And especially with little kids, that's not going to get you anywhere. What you really need to do is just like allow them to have those negative emotions, allow them to feel the sadness and frustration and anger and whatever other things might be coming along, and then help navigate them through that in a way, right? Without feeling judged or attacked yourself, even if they're using language that might be, sound judgy or attacking or whatever, because they're kids and they don't really know any better. So I hope this was a helpful kind of discussion of like things we did well, things we maybe could have done a little bit differently, and sort of how it fits into the larger thoughts that I have about parenting and storytelling and some of these techniques that hopefully will help you even with those little transitions maybe that you're struggling with in your family. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the episode today. And I want to encourage you please to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player, or more importantly, just share this with maybe another dad that you know who's going through a big life transition, who's maybe having to make a change, whether they're staying local, but they're changing jobs, or they're going through a move, even if it's just across town. Share this with somebody that you think it might be helpful to. I want to say thanks as always to Phil Raban for editing the episode, making it sound so good. And I want to encourage you to tune in next week, where I'm going to do that full breakdown of the Becky Kennedy and Andrew Huberman interview. April is Autism Acceptance Month, so I have a few interviews that are coming up that'll probably air at the end of April and into early May, just talking about a little bit about autism. It's a topic I've been wanting to cover on the podcast for a while, but haven't quite found the right series of guests for yet. And I think I have done that now. So I'm excited to get that to you as quickly as we can. So that'll be coming soon to a podcast app near you. Until then, remember that what you do as a dad matters. Keep building healthier dads, happier kids, and stronger communities. Thanks so much.
The information included in this podcast and other Docs to Dads platforms is intended for your education and entertainment only. It is not intended as medical advice and should not replace a relationship with a primary care pediatrician or other provider who will give the most appropriate recommendations for your individual situation.